Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey there, it's Larry Morgan here, another Snark Monkey episode, and back for the second year in a row. It is Josh Welsh, president of Film Independent, the organization behind this weekend's Independent Spirit Awards on Saturday. The real award show this weekend, if you're a movie lover. It's happening on Saturday. It will be broadcast on IFC and also worldwide on their Twitter feed. We just get way into the weeds talking about independent film. And this is, boy, this year is just a treasure trove of riches, of uncut gems, if you will, throughout the cinematic universe in independent film. So join us, won't you? And make sure to check out the Independent Spirit Awards on Saturday on IFC, hosted by Aubrey Plaza. Here we go with Josh Welsh. I am here once again with Josh Welsh, president of Film Independent. How are you, sir? How are you holding up?
I'm holding up. Things are good. How are you, Larry?
I don't want you to feel... I'm great. I'm not under the same sort of pressure that you are, because this Saturday, what I will be doing is watching your show, as opposed to you, which is basically having to get everything ready.
Yes.
So the fact that you even are taking the time to talk to me today, maybe this is like your version of nap time.
Yeah.
Where nobody will bother you for like 20, 30 minutes.
That's right. I can hide out in your studio.
Is that it? You just came to me as a respite?
That's right. I'm avoiding everyone in the office. I'm avoiding the show producers. I love talking to you, and it's
awesome.
I love getting the word out about the Spirit Awards too. Yeah, it's coming up on Saturday, and this is a crazy time. You know, we put on an award show on the beach in Santa Monica in a tent in February. It's the dumbest idea, but
it would only be dumber if it was like in Chicago or Minneapolis
exactly.
or something. But it happens to be for what we in Southern California call winter. It happens to actually kind of be cold.
Yeah.
So what is the current forecast?
Current forecast is sunny and 66,
all
which
right.
is perfect.
That's not
That's actually awesome weather for this. The last couple of years we've had rain either the night before or the morning of the show, which is, it's quite scary when you're dealing with the elements and you're doing a live television broadcast out in it.
It's kind of been fun to watch when it has been a little soggy, other than the fact that you are terribly concerned about people losing their footing and falling and hurting themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the possibility that the amount of electrical equipment you have in there might electrocute someone. Other than that, it's really fun to watch those
issues. Yeah, no, in the last 5 years, there was a year when it rained the morning of the show, and we actually had, and this is a well-produced, good-looking TV show, but we had to have buckets on
stage. No, we made it sound so janky. I'm sorry about that. It's not.
It's a really well-produced, great-looking show, but we actually had buckets on stage because the rain started coming down in the middle of the show, and there was like, you're in a tent. It's a well-made tent, but it's a tent. And there was a leak, and it was coming on the stage. And we're like, oh, my God. Like, you have talent coming up to win their awards, and you don't want them to slip in the water.
And some of them were literally just having trouble keeping their footing. So it did make it a little more exciting for reasons you didn't intend.
Yes.
What we are talking about, of course, is the 35th Annual Film Independent Spirit Awards. What is the nickname? The Spirities? That's not it. It's the Indie,
over the years,
Indie Spirits?
A lot of people call it the Indies, the Indie Spirits, the Spirit Awards.
All right.
In its very first year, before it became the Film Independent Spirit Awards, and this is long before I was with the organization, it was actually called the Findies, which was the Friend of the Independents.
Oh.
Like the very first year of the show, they're like, let's do an award show and we'll call it the Findies.
Yeah, I don't like that at
thankfully,
all.
Thankfully, that one didn't stick.
Good.
Yeah.
Thankfully, over 35 years, somebody kind of figured it out. But it would be, 35 years, though, is quite, that's quite impressive, actually, because this is an awards show that has not, as a show, has really kind of only started to gain some a little more prominence, I would say, over the past 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. where it's people have begun to notice, I think largely due to the fact that there have been some issues and some disenchantment with the larger awards shows, let's say, or the award show whose name we shall not speaketh, if you want to go a Harry Potter here. And part of that is due to the fact that just from the very nature, and we talked about this before, the very nature of independent film is that you are generally going to get more diversity, more cultural stories, more different countries and different perspectives, and especially because you're talking about younger, fresher filmmakers, many of them making their film debut or a motion, you know, a feature length debut.
Yep.
So the diversity, just from the standpoint of cultural background, ethnic background, gender background, is always across the board so interesting and so much richer than what you see in any other awards program.
Absolutely.
And that's part of what Film Independent is about. Tell us a little bit about Film Independent, what their mission is, what their goal is, who you are.
Absolutely. So Film Independent, we're the organization that produces the Spirit Awards, and we've been around closer to 40 years than the 35 of the show. But the organization, you know, we're here to champion creative independence and visual storytelling. And that means that we support filmmakers, writers, directors, and producers who are on the early side of their career, but also mid-career filmmakers, really helping them with mentorship, with developing their projects, with programs that connect them to financiers. We do a financing market. And we're also here to sort of build the audience for this great independent filmmaking. And that's something that's increasingly important as the industry keeps changing. You know, there's so much consolidation going on in the film industry. I mean, since the last time we spoke last year, it's like, you know, Disney and Fox are now together.
Right.
Warner and AT&T have collapsed together, and it's really everything. There's fewer and fewer companies, and the ones that remain are bigger and bigger. And while some of those companies make great movies and great TV shows, the fact is for independent creative voices, that's generally not a good thing when there's fewer companies out there controlling what gets made and what gets distributed.
Yeah, but in theory, you would think that there would be less opportunity for independent filmmakers. And yet, it feels like maybe some of these bigger companies actually have the opportunity for independent filmmakers to have their work be seen simply because there are more places to see them now. Because if you open up the door to streaming and, you know, art houses might, what, that old term sounds so antiquated now, but art, you know, art houses for movies, maybe they're not being supported as much, but there just seems to be more of an avenue to actually go seek out unusual titles, the kinds of things you would normally never see, where theater chains and big theaters have to rely on giant tentpole branded movies to get people in seats anymore.
Well,
so
that's exactly
it seems like there's more of an opportunity for independent filmmakers to have their voices heard.
It's a really fascinating time. You know, I talk to friends or family members who don't live in LA, have nothing to do with the industry, and they will have seen really obscure movies. Yeah. And they'll say, oh, I saw this incredible film, and it's something that's up for a Spirit Award. And they saw it largely thanks to streaming platforms.
Right.
You can access things that 10, 20 years ago would have been much harder to find, or you would have been able to see it for, you know, its 1 week theatrical run.
Right, right. Yes. I mean, back when I was growing up in Odessa, Texas, and when I would hear about these kind of quirky movies, and I would be like, well, I'm going to have to wait for that to come out on VHS when that gets invented because I don't know where I'm going to see that until I moved to LA. And I literally spent, I mean, one of the reasons I did it, I had terrible grades at USC was because I was scooting off to the new art because I was playing catch up on all these movies that I would have never been able to see before. I think of something like Cutter's Way, which is, I don't know why
great
that sticks
film
in my head.
I love that film.
But Ivan Passer, I believe, Jeff Bridges stars in that. It's an amazing film.
The director on that just passed away.
Oh, that's correct. He did.
Yeah.
That's a really terrific early 80s movie that I would have never seen in. In fact, it was almost not seen anyway because it had a title change and nobody knew what to do with it.
Really?
Yeah, it was called Cutter and Bone when it first was released.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm going really deep in the weeds here. But my point is, you're absolutely right. You can, and I think that's maybe where sometimes social media and the internet actually helps things, because it can be just a terrible evil thing a lot of the time. But sometimes just good quality stuff bubbles up to the surface without major promotion, without a bunch of ad dollars. When people start talking about something in a grassroots way, kind of like I was telling you earlier, people talking on my podcast I was listening to, they kept mentioning Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which I literally have not heard of other than the fact that I know it's up for a nomination on Saturday.
Yeah. Yep.
And these guys on another podcast, I'll plug Blank Check, were absolutely over the moon about it. And it's like, okay, I trust their opinion. I know nothing about the film. I'm going to seek that out.
Yeah.
And can't wait, because it's going to be a real discovery for me.
That is the new word of mouth. I love it.
Absolutely.
It's a great way to find stuff.
So let's talk about some of the nominees that we've got for this year. This is a really good year for movies, period.
Excellent year for movies.
Just
amazing.
Across the board.
Yeah.
You want to just start at the top with...
It's a
great way to get an overview if we talk about Best Feature.
So Best Feature at the Spirit Awards, we've got... it's an incredible... Yeah, you look at this. These films are so diverse and different, and none of them are like the others. You have A Hidden Life by Terrence Malick, Clemency by Chinonye Chukwu, The Farewell by Lulu Wang, which is an incredible film, Marriage Story, which is the Netflix title.
Right.
I mean, it's Noah Baumbach's film.
Absolutely.
Which is amazing. And then Uncut Gems by the Safdie brothers.
And in any of the year, Uncut Gems, I think, would have been one that could have crossed over into a number of the other awards programs and kind of got left out because of the kinds of movies that are available there. But also, when did you ever think that you were going to have an award ceremony at the Film Independent Spirit Awards when Adam Sandler was going to be a player in the mix, right?
Yeah, right.
And by the way, deservedly so.
Incredible performance.
Great performance. And the Safdie brothers, again, guys I wasn't that familiar with, and now I want to see everything these guys do.
Yeah. I mean, they are true visionary filmmakers. They have a completely unique style that's all their own. This is, I think, their biggest budget film, and I don't know the budget. It's quite small, but bigger than anything else they did before. And I think... Martin Scorsese had seen their previous work and became a champion of theirs and helped with. This was like their dream film that they've been trying to get made for a number of years, and he kind of stepped in, and I believe he's an EP on this, and helped them get it made.
And Terrence Malick, you talk about A Hidden Life. Terrence Malick is kind of almost the godfather of independent film, really, in a way, right? I mean, here's a guy who in the 70s was considered maybe one of those next big renegade filmmakers, but always operated even outside of those guys. I mean, it kind of went at his own pace, large gap between a lot of movies for a number of years.
Years off making films.
And they're always completely different than anything else that's out there, but completely watchable. And A Hidden Life is quite a compelling story.
Yeah. I love the fact that at the Spirit Awards, you also have... So a lot of times you think independent film is about young filmmakers. It's about discovering new talent, which it very much is. But then you also have somebody, this master like Terrence Malick, coming back. And he's still operating in that space. This is where he wants to be working. And... But you know, I want to go back to something you asked at the beginning in terms of diversity and inclusion. That is something that you see a lot at the Spirit Awards more than some of the other shows. And you know, this year there's been, as there has been for several years, a real conversation about the lack of diversity in Hollywood. It feels like it's not changing, right? And when you look at the stats, it's generally not a good picture in terms of women having opportunities to direct, people of color, on-screen representation. It's like the industry is very stuck in its way and in terms of whose voices get shared. And I'm glad that conversation is going on. I have to say, in the award space, I have to admit I get a little frustrated sometimes because people will be ragging on these other award shows about how it's, you know, this lack of diversity. And I'm over here saying, hey, thinking, you know, it's true, very good point, but the Spirit Awards has year after year really been forging a path of recognizing, right? We have a lot of films written, directed, and produced by women, by people of color.
And always have. I mean, if they've been out there, then you've recognized them.
And the thing that it brings to mind for me is that it's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
You it's really not. There's so, especially this year, there's so many incredible films directed by women.
I think that's the second level of frustration is then when you do have more female filmmakers working and making movies that deserve recognition, and then they aren't. And it just, again, shows there's still a weird stigma going on, obviously.
Yeah. So at Film Independent, you know, I think the way you make change happen is you have to embody it in some way first. Like, just to say, and of course, you know, at Film Independent, we can always do a better job. Our mission is to promote diversity. So I'm not saying it's over, that everything we do is perfect. But our board of directors, our staff, our membership, the nominating committees that we put together, these groups are and always have been a diverse, inclusive group. There's men, there's women, there's people of color, there's LGBT, there's people with disabilities who are part of the conversation, who are the gatekeepers, who are the decision makers. And if you have to have it at every level of an organization. And our members who vote on the Spirit Awards are an incredible, you know, we track their demographics. It's a very diverse, inclusive group. It's equally men and women, it's people of color, kind of everyone is welcome at Film Independent. And when you have that at every level, then when it comes time for the Spirit Awards, it shows up. It's not like we don't have a diversity committee. We don't have like a little ampersand saying, oh, we got to make sure it's diverse at the end of the conversation.
Right.
It's baked in to the process.
Well, that's
and it
because
just happens.
I think you guys tend to go into the whole process going, there are other stories to tell.
Yeah.
And why don't we give opportunities to people to tell their stories who may not have the resources or the means to do that if the story is worth telling.
Yeah.
So when you start with that mindset, then that opens you up to any country, any background, any story, no matter what it is. But the difference is, let's see and hear something we haven't heard or seen before.
Yeah.
And when you just walk out with that initiation,
yep,
then you're going to get all these different people from different places anyway. So
and you know, to that, I come to film as a film lover. Like, I've loved movies since I was a little kid.
Right.
And I think, I mean, I love lots of different aspects of movies, but what I really love is walking into a theater and discovering a filmmaker that I didn't know before, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the best thing about going to a festival or just going to see a new movie. I tend not to read reviews beforehand. I mean, sometimes I do, but I love going in blind and just being surprised. And I feel like that's what happens with independent film. Like, that's what's great about independent film is you just Lulu Wang, The Farewell, like that movie, to discover that, her world, her family story showing up in that film is such a great thing. And
I think any time that I can go into, I mean, movies has always been an escape for me, and I think for a lot of people, it's it doesn't have to be a fantasy world, but if I'm being exposed to a place or a culture that I didn't know that much about before, mm-hmm, and it's brand new to me, but it feels absolutely authentic, whether it is a fantasy film or not. If I feel like it feels like a real thing, and The Farewell is a prime example of, here's a cultural thing that through Awkwafina's eyes, I get to both relate to her and also learn something I didn't really know about that cultural choice, which is basically a matriarch of the family has been diagnosed with a fatal disease, and they choose not to tell her about it so that she can live out her life happier. And I think as a Westerner, we're going, that doesn't feel right, but for them, that seems absolutely natural. I know that's based on an actual story. It's based on an actual article, magazine article, I believe, right?
It was based on a This American Life story.
Yes, that's right.
Which Lulu told about her own family.
But as I was watching the film, I was seeing a place that I didn't know that much about. I was seeing a world, again, through Awkwafina's eyes as kind of, mm-hmm, somebody who straddles those two worlds. And I felt like it was absolutely authentic from the moment I was into it. And I was just soaking it up because I know I would never act that way. I know I would never be that way. But it resonated with me because it was so important to this family.
That's what you get with independent film, whereas with the studios, and I have to say, I'll preface this by saying I see everything. So yeah, I go to the big studio.
We talked about this last year. We love movies, and we love those.
Yeah. It's fine. It's great. But like, so I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she is now, she kind of held off on the Marvel Universe for a long time. And now she's just going in deep. She's watching everything.
And are you rewatching?
I'm rewatching. Yeah. And it's fun. But I'm like, I mean, it does strike me that it is such a, like, it's the Marvel Cinematic Universe, in meaning it's one world and all the characters operate in the same world and there's a common aesthetic to
it. Right.
And, you know, some movies are great, some movies are not great, but it's all like, you feel like you're in this one world. And I find it's just so limiting. Like, it's great. It's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'll always go and check it out.
But it
like,
scratches
you're
an
in
itch.
One thing.
Yes.
And, you could say the same about the DC universe and certainly the Star Wars Disney universe now. It's like, you know, I love Mandalorian. I'm watching that, but it's actually love Mandalorian. But it's like,
me too.
I just think it's interesting that these corporations are, they're doubling down on building a universe. It's a branded property that they control and the storytelling is all limited. Once you're in the Marvel universe, there's certain rules that you have to play within. And I just feel like audiences need so much more, you know, whether it's a movie like Portrait of a Lady on Fire or Clemency or The Farewell or Booksmart, you know, Olivia Wilde's movie this year was like, that doesn't belong in any cinematic universe. It's her own story. And that's what audiences are really clamoring for.
Yeah. And we should mention Booksmart up for Best First Feature for Olivia Wilde. And even when that movie came out and it got that was one of those movies that when it started to hit, it was people seemed to just have a thirst for this very refreshing take on something maybe that felt familiar, but it was from a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
And at the time, I remember thinking books, it just shows you what kind of a rich year it is for independent film, because I remember thinking at the time, well, that thing's going to clean up. And the fact is, it's competing against a lot of other really, really good movies.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited for Olivia Wilde that she got recognized from the Best First feature here.
Yeah, yeah, I am too.
What other categories are a prime example of this? I mean, I think if we look at the performances, that's a really good cross-section. Let's look at Best Female Lead. Tell me about Karen Allen in Colwell.
So Karen Allen, I mean, I'm sure your listeners know Karen Allen. She's had an incredible career. She's been acting for, you know, several decades. And
by the way, we're talking about Indiana Jones,
Karen Allen. We're talking about
Raiders of the Lost Ark, Karen
Raiders
Allen.
Of the Lost Ark.
I mean, that's the iconic role, right? And Animal House.
She was actually nominated for a Spirit Award the last time was back in the 80s for Paul Newman directed a film version of Glass Menagerie that she was in.
Right.
And she is amazing. Colwell is it's a lower budget feature. It's a drama. And it's a really nuanced performance from her. It's beautiful work. Definitely not. I mean, again, not to keep talking about other award shows, but I think we really, our nominating committees watch everything. This year, we had close to 500 eligible films that they watched. It was a huge increase over the number we got last year, which is interesting. But they really take it seriously. They watch everything, and I love it when, Karen Allen got great reviews for this performance, but it didn't really get in the awards space other recognition. So I was very happy that it did from us. Of course, Renee Zellweger in Judy is a tour de force performance. And that's one I'm sure, you know, she's other award shows are looking at her for as well.
But absolutely.
It's also sort of a comeback for her. I mean, comeback's the wrong word. She never went away, but it's just a kind of a career-defining performance.
Well, she had some very kind of high-profile performances and then didn't. And and I think she's always been somebody that people have respected quite a bit. But then when you're not in that kind of award circle for a while anymore, and especially if you're not in a hit, you know, you can go a couple of different directions. And then to come back with something so poignant and so on the mark as that performance, you can't help but go, oh, it's a reminder of maybe we just kind of relegated her to a little bit too much of a bubbly, you know, romantic lead or something, and it turns out, you know what? I forgot. She's really, really good at what she does.
Yeah. She also did all of her own singing in that, and And she just brought, you know, she was Judy Garland in that, but she also brought so much of herself. And I think, like, another Judy Garland I loved a few years back was Judy Davis, who did her, but it was a totally different type of Judy Garland.
Right.
And in this one, there's kind of a lightness and humor and vulnerability to the way Renee Zellweger played her that I thought was just unexpected and beautiful. And then Alfre Woodard in Clemency. This is a film that didn't come out until December, so a lot of people still haven't seen it. And she plays a prison warden who deals with the death penalty, and she kind of oversees like when people are going to be executed. And it's like, that's something I never thought about. And I'm embarrassed to say, or just not even embarrassed, but it's just true. I haven't thought much about the life of a warden and what it's like to be in a prison. A lot of wardens are African-American and are African-American women. Like, this is maybe not what
who would have ever thought of that.
You would think.
Right.
And so this is like what it's like for her, and just the humanity of going through and the way you interact with prisoners and when they're coming to the end of life, and how that impacts her and her family. And Alfre Woodard, I mean, you know, incredible.
I mean, I mean, you couldn't have a more solid name in any category for any year than her. Mary-Kate Place and Diane, and Elizabeth Moss in Her Smell,
which is another one
of those performances where it's like, how is this actress going to, this actor, I'm trying to do that more often, how is she going to take what is ostensibly a completely unlikable person for much of this movie and still draw you in a way that makes it compelling.
Yeah.
And she does it.
She
right?
does it, yeah.
Tremendous. As long as we're talking about, let's talk about supporting females, because this is also one of those where, thank you for recognizing Jennifer Lopez in Hustlers.
I mean, come on.
How do you miss that one? I'm sorry, folks. How do you miss it? You're already talking about one of the most iconic people in entertainment, period. And then essentially, after all these years of taking, basically she took all that star power she's got and all that goodwill that she's got from being just multi-talented, and then doing something slightly against type, but still managing to pack all that star power in there and do it with subtlety and nuance, but also be, I mean, it's like, how do you miss that one?
Yeah.
That's a swing and a miss, folks, if you don't have her. I agree.
I'm so thrilled that she's nominated. And, you know, again, going back to our process, we put together nominating committees who watch all the films. And nobody on staff at Film Independent is on those committees. It's working professional filmmakers. So it's a mix of writers, directors, producers, film critics, film programmers, who choose the nominations. And we never know who they're going to go for. They have a lot of freedom. And I was nervously awaiting the best supporting female category, because in my mind I was like, Jennifer Lopez is just clearly belongs in there, and I was happy they went for her.
Absolutely.
This is my favorite performance of hers since Out of Sight, which is
back
a ways. And it's like she has, I mean, she just inhabits that role so beautifully. And also I want to say the director, Laureen Scafaria, did a beautiful job with it.
Well,
cinematography.
Oh, yeah. It looks beautiful. The entire cast, even if you can consider it somewhat of an ensemble, because there is such a good group in there.
I mean,
everybody in it. Let's actually, speaking of Laureen, here's another area where thank you for recognizing Laureen in the Best Director category, because it absolutely deserved it. Alma Harrell for Honey Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Am I pronouncing her name correctly?
Alma is... Okay, this is not her first film. This is her first fiction feature film.
She's
done some documentary and kind of hybrid doc fiction films.
Right.
And she's done a lot of music videos and a lot of commercials. But she is, to me, she's one of the most exciting discoveries of this year as just a new filmmaker and a new voice. And she's like, I mean, she has the chops. She's like a great filmmaker.
Anybody who's seen Honey Boy, that you would never think that, oh, that was a documentary, you know, filmmaker.
It's like
it's got
visual style.
It's a crazy looking movie,
but in
the best way possible.
I mean, Alma is just she is just a badass. She is like she kind of announced herself this year. She made this film, you know, and the film did very well. It was picked up by Amazon. It got a good release. But simultaneously with that, I don't know if you're aware of this, she launched something called Free the Work, which is it's essentially a website designed to help promote women and people of color working in film and television. And it's a few years ago, she launched something called Free the Bid. So she came from advertising, and she noted that, like, she'd go out on jobs, and she was always, like, the only woman up for a job. Mm-hmm. And she was doing, like, high-level big commercials, and it was all men. The advertising industry's really been dominated by men. So she created something called Free the Bid that was a website. It was, like, essentially an online directory of women who were, like, good, who had the chops, who should be doing commercials. And she would promote this to commercial houses and agencies. And it really caught on in that world. And then this year, she got funding to expand it. She changed the name to Free the Work, and it's really aimed at promoting women who are, you know, working or trying to get work in not just commercials, but music videos, film, television. And it's a major initiative. You know, a lot of people have been obviously talking about this, and there are these lists going around that people will share internal to production companies and things. But with Free the Work, she's created this very public-facing platform. I don't know where she got funding for it, but it seems like it's pretty well funded, and she's really, like, she's just out there pushing this and shining a bright light on it.
That's great.
And it's really having an impact.
It's great to see when it's one thing for independent filmmakers to kind of break through in film, but it's another thing when they kind of take that opportunity and also leverage that into making other opportunities happen for other people who are struggling to kind of have that break, they actually kind of put their success where their mouth is and say,
absolutely,
all right, now I'm here and I'm going to help this person get a step up and that person and other voices who haven't been heard. And you see that happen a lot in independent film
you
where
do.
It's like, okay,
like Ava DuVernay is a great example.
Exactly.
Of that.
I've got the spotlight on me for a moment and I'm going to use that not just to promote my career, but the careers of other really interesting work that's going on out there.
But you know, on Honey Boy, this is amazing. I heard her telling this story somewhere that, so it stars Shia LaBeouf, and he wrote the screenplay, and it's based on
slightly
his life.
Autobiographical.
And, yeah.
Pretty
autobiographical about him and his father.
Right.
And I mean, I think this is all public. He was like in a court mandated, I might be getting this wrong, but I think he was in a court mandated therapy program following some troubles that he had had, and, you know, drugs and alcohol and whatever. And as part of the therapy, they said, you need to write a story. And it took the form of a screenplay. Mm-hmm. So it was like kind of part of this program that he first wrote the story. But he had been a fan. He wrote a fan letter to Alma Harrell.
Oh, I did not know this.
That's how they met. Like, she got a letter from Shia LaBeouf out of the blue saying, I really liked your movie.
Yeah.
And then they got to know each other. They became friends. I think they did a short film or music video together. And then they did this. And so now they've become collaborators. I think they're doing another film together. But it was just, I don't know, it was a great story of, like, can you imagine getting a fan letter from Shia LaBeouf?
Right.
And then you're like, oh, let's make a movie together. So.
Oh, wow. Amazing. And it's turned into something, I mean, it's like their sensibilities totally meshed in a way that's like, because it could have, that's a story that could have gone off the rails
could
in
have gone
any other
so
hands.
Off the rails, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What other category really excites you, or what other nomination or the film, personally, a film that you're so happy is getting some recognition here? Anything jump out at you, Josh?
Well, I will. So every year we give out something called the Robert Altman Award, which is given to an ensemble cast. It's actually given to the director, the casting director, and an ensemble cast. And
thankfully, the casting director. Why isn't a casting director given more credit and
they
given
never
awards?
Are. I mean, it's really a lot of award shows don't recognize them at all. I mean, the Casting Society of America does, but outside of that, I think it's the Spirit Awards with the Altman Award is really. And Marriage Story. I mean, those performances, any one of those performances, you know, whether Scarlett Johansson or Adam Driver, Laura Dern, they're all so strong. But that is the story of a family. It's a family going through a divorce, and all the people in that going through that, the different divorce attorney, the kids, the boyfriends, the girlfriends. It's like such a cohesive cast. So I was really thrilled that we gave that the Robert Altman Award.
Right. That's wonderful. I mean, in a movie where Merritt Weaver shows up and she's only on screen for just a few minutes and still you're going, oh my God, everybody in this is that good?
Yeah. Ray Liotta, unbelievable.
It took a while even to go, wait, that's Ray Liotta. That's Goodfellas Ray Liotta right there.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's a perfect connection to somebody like Altman too. That's
that one
group
I love.
Fantastic.
And also, you know, yeah, I mean, all the acting categories, frankly. Best male lead, you've got, oh my God, this guy, Chris Galust from Give Me Liberty. That's a film that I'm betting a lot of your listeners have not seen.
Not familiar with it.
Incredible film. I believe it's, you can find it. If you go online, you can find Give Me Liberty. But it's an incredible film, and Chris is really, to me, a discovery. I wasn't familiar with him before this. Kelvin Harrison Jr. in Loose. He's an amazing actor. Young guy. We're going to be seeing a lot of him. And then we have Robert Pattinson in The Lighthouse. Totally different type of performance from him.
And this is not your Twilight, folks. Yeah. And
Adam
then Sandler in the mix. Yeah.
Uncut Gems, you know, which if you're looking for Happy Madison and you go into this, you might not be thrilled, but oh my God.
But
a heartbreaking tour de force performance.
But you are getting Sandler, but you're getting it channeled in a way that you've never quite seen before. I mean, it's not that he's only a one note guy, but you can kind of never forget it's him,
mm-hmm.
but it's that manic energy that he has utilized in a comic way in other movies. And this is actually surprisingly a very funny movie for as dark as it is.
Yeah.
But it's also one of the most tense experiences I've ever had in a film where it has nothing to do with suspense or, you know, you're not being manipulated. It's just watching somebody make terrible decisions. All of it motivated in his mind by something that makes perfect sense to him, and he sees playing out a certain way.
Yeah.
And you're going, and the problem is that, because I think we all know people like this, and hopefully it's not we see ourselves in it, we all know people who are like, stop doing that. Just for a second, think about your actions. And we know people in the world who are just, I'm moving on to the next thing to cover the thing behind me so that I can do the thing ahead of me that will cover that thing that I just did.
Yeah.
It's insane. I lost 20 pounds during that movie, just clinching, I think.
I have a friend who I did too. I have a friend who watched it who told me, he said, I don't know, everybody's saying how tense that movie made them feel. He's like, that movie just felt like the inside of my head.
And
oh my God.
Okay.
I have concerns
that
for you.
That says a lot about you, dude.
It's really, yeah.
but it's immensely watchable. And that's the thing I hope, like, if you see Adam Sandler and you go, okay, I know that's not a typical Sandler movie.
Right.
And you get into it, and it definitely is not what you're used to seeing, but it is absolutely watchable. And it's a great entry point if you're a little wary of independent movies. It is highly entertaining if you are willing to just kind of put up with that tension.
It's very true. It's interesting, though, because it is Adam Sandler. Like, it's not he's recognizable as himself.
Yeah,
but
he's not doing it's not like he's doing an impression of something or he's dropped into a character in a method way.
Right.
But and you get over that it's Adam Sandler right away because you do believe he is this character. That's what makes it such a special performance, is because it's hard to get past a presence that big,
mm-hmm.
that's a star that big, and the fact that he was able to do it and carry that movie, because he's virtually in every frame of it.
Yeah.
And the Softy Brothers, again, as I mentioned, the guys who directed it are somebody I have to go back and look at their other stuff. I just have
their
to see. And I can't wait to see what they do.
And they've worked with some really interesting actors. They did a film with Pattinson a couple of years ago that was also great. They're amazing filmmakers.
Yeah.
They've made, I think, 4 or 5 films now. And this feels like the culmination of, like, they have a definitely a visual style and a thing that they do, a sound design that's very unique. I also think our international film category, so we're, you know, every award show handles international differently.
Right.
Sometimes it means foreign language. Sometimes it means made in a foreign country. For us, we have something is international if the writer, director, producer are not U.S. citizens. So we don't care what language it's in. It can even shoot in the U.S. If a director from abroad is making a film in the U.S., it might feel like an American film, but for us, we're going to count it as international.
Gotcha.
This year, none of them fit that profile, but, you know, it's a hard category because we always have 5 nominations, and actually this year we have 6. What am I saying? But they're like the 5 or 6 best films from outside the U.S. for the year. So it's a very, very high bar. These tend to be incredibly accomplished films from different countries. And
right off the top, Parasite from South Korea is obviously that's gotten the most attention out of most of these, deservedly so.
Yeah.
It still probably is my favorite movie of the year, although I haven't seen some of these others in here.
Parasite is one of those movies that, Bong Joon-ho, the director, is an auteur now. He's made many incredible films, but to me, this one, it's my favorite film of the year as well, and just... I shouldn't say favorite. It's the film that I find myself thinking about the most.
Right.
That's stuck with me. I'm just like, what? Like, I did not expect that.
Yeah.
And
it's also just as a movie, it's somebody who is in full command of the cinema. You know, when you see somebody who's absolute, where everything that his mark is clearly all over. And that's not to say that every performance in it as an ensemble, again, that group is note perfect, and those actors are amazing. It's beautifully shot. It's beautifully designed. But it is just cinematically just this thing that takes you, again, talk about putting you in a place that you've never quite experienced before. I don't know if that's at all what South Korea is really like in real life, but whatever world I'm living in, I want to know more about that. And I kind of believe that in some way it's authentic, even if it's his ideal of what that class struggle is supposed to be like.
I
same as you, Josh, I haven't been able to stop thinking about that movie.
I love how excited we're getting talking about movies. You know, a lot of people say we're living in the golden age of television and streaming. And of course, there is a lot of great stuff that you can see that way,
sure.
But I find the movies are so good, right? This is not a dying art form. This is like just incredible work is being done.
Well, you can have both. The great thing is that there are people who are able to tell stories over the course of 8, 10, 12 episodes and do that beautifully, and there's a place for that, and I think we all enjoy that. But also, sometimes you just need 90 minutes or 2 hours of telling a story, and it doesn't need to be a sequel or a brand or a franchise, and that's where the original stories come in, and it doesn't need to be any more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And those, ultimately, I feel like are still more satisfying experiences. I'd much rather talk about Parasite or His Girl Friday or The Godfather than... wasn't The Sopranos great? Of course The Sopranos was great, but what's going to live with me longer than that 1.5 to 2 hour experience where I was completely enveloped in something that I'd never seen before, and I probably will never kind of have that same experience again?
Yeah.
It's a very different thing, and I know with me it resonates longer and stays with me longer and has more impact on how I think, what I think of these people, what I think of that situation. I think movies have more power that way.
Yeah, I do too.
And that's what you guys are all about.
It's funny you mentioned His Girl Friday.
It's my favorite comedy
of
all time.
I haven't watched it in a number of years, and I got my 13-year-old daughter to watch it. And, oh my God, that dialogue has got to be the fastest ever.
That's
all the screwballs.
That's
it's
the thing.
Just like lightning speed.
I love it. I love it more than, generally when people talk about classic film and the greatest comedy of all time, and it seems like over the past few years, it's generally been Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
And for me, it's His Girl Friday.
Yeah.
It's a just a freaking roller coaster from top to bottom. Josh, we're such nerds. We could talk about this forever. We should talk about the awards ceremony because it will air live on IFC on Saturday. It will be so much more interesting, so much more fun than any other award show. It's interesting because independent film tends to have a reputation. And look, I've attended film festivals. I've sat through a bunch of movies and been depressed because they deal with really deep, dark topics. And what's really interesting about your award show is that it is so irreverent, so goofy. Aubrey Plaza is back. She doesn't give two F's about what she says.
Yeah.
And she's also absolutely a fan of independent film. And she's become a little bit of indie film royalty now
in
terms of what the jobs that she takes and the role she takes.
You know, last year was the first year she hosted.
Right.
And She was I thought she was amazing. Yeah. She is a great host. It's okay. Being a host, an award show host, is a thankless job.
It's the worst job ever.
The worst job ever. It's hard to do. There are people who you think would be great who aren't. And then Aubrey stepped into it last year, and she was just, she commanded the room. She was funny. Yeah. She had great timing. She's knowledgeable. She just held the audience in her hand.
She does love what she's talking about.
She
and
does.
I think for her,
that
I think
through.
I think it comes down to, it doesn't seem like she cares what people think of her, and that's very important because if you think too much about that, you can really go bonkers. And she kept it exactly the way it needed to be.
Just, so she's really been working hard on the show for this year. She's been in the office upstairs every day the last couple of weeks just working on the show.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad I haven't run into her in the lobby or I would have accosted her with accolades.
But
and she would have sent security after me.
The show is – it's broadcast. So it's on February the 8th. It's broadcast live on IFC. It's 2 p.m. West Coast, 5 p.m. East Coast time. But we're also going to be streaming live on Twitter.
Right.
On the Film Independent Twitter page as well as IFC's page. So if you don't have IFC, go watch it on Twitter. You can see the whole thing there. We're also doing an arrival show hosted by American Airlines. It will be really fun. Honestly, having the show on Twitter, this is the first time the Spirit Awards are going global. You can watch it anywhere on the planet.
That's fantastic.
And I have to tell you something. This is really weird. Last year, it was not available. It was only available in the U.S., and we got complaints. This is so crazy. We got on Facebook, we got, for some reason, or on Twitter, we have people internationally who follow Film Independent, and we got over 1,000 complaints from people outside the U.S. saying, why can't we watch the Spirit Awards? There's this audience outside of the U.S. who knows about the show and wanted to watch it, and we were like, we didn't put it out there because we didn't know that this would
– amazing.
You'd want to see it. And now we're going global, which I'm really thrilled because this is going to build the audience.
If you think that the typical award show you watch has become boring or predictable or you just don't care about the people you're seeing go up there or you just want to see something that celebrates the art of filmmaking perhaps a little more in depth and a little more in a challenging way. And it's really fun. And if you want to discover movies that you can go ahead and admit, I've never heard of that, but it looks interesting. This is the one to watch. It is always so much fun. It is fun to
watch
top to bottom. It's you never know kind of what's going to happen. And it's...
We don't play people off.
Yeah. And you also see kind of genuine, and it's also not the silly drunk uncle of award shows.
That's right.
Which we know which one that one is, even though there definitely is some imbibing going on. Man, it's such a refreshing thing to watch every year, and it's truly my favorite award show.
Thank you, Larry.
And
that's
I always
great to
discover
hear.
Something new that I can't wait to dive into. So, Josh, I wish you the best. I know it's going to be
Larry.
A big, big year for you.
Thank you.
And thank goodness you have great movies to celebrate this year. All right. So where can people find Film Independent if they want to kind of check that out?
So check out Film Independent. Just go to filmindependent.org. We're an open access organization. Anyone can join, whether you're a filmmaker or a film lover.
Become a member.
Oh, my gosh.
And you have so many services and resources to offer, especially for up-and-coming filmmakers or even people who think they want to be.
Our members are the ones who vote on the winners. This is the thing. So this is the other thing I love about the Spirit Awards is the winners are chosen, but we have about 8,000 members now around the world. Mm-hmm. And they get to watch all the nominated films. We send them out via secure links. They get. I mean, this year I think we sent out 39 films to our members and – I mean, for the price of membership, it's a great deal. But more than that, you become part of the community of the people who decide. Like, these are the best independent films of the year. So, everybody should join.
Yeah. I mean, if you love movies, it's worth supporting just for that reason alone. Oh, Josh.
Thank you, Larry.
So excited. All right. So come back next year. We'll talk for 3 hours.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. Block off enough time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.